Your thoughts?
I think Mega is incredibly brave. She, and as are all the students at MIT and on college campuses who are standing up for Palestine. Yeah, everything she said really speaks to the heart and soul of the student movements, which are going to be undeterred. And that was clear in her speech. Students will keep speaking up for Palestine and for liberation across college campuses. So I'm really proud of Mega for finding the right words and really being very courageous.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. Did you get your diploma after you gave your commencement address, Zahra Imam?
I did. You know, and I have it so far, so I don't have any, haven't faced any challenges with that yet.
Even though Mega Murray was not allowed to attend her graduation, MIT did bestow upon her her diploma, unlike NYU that took away the diploma of a young student who spoke out in his graduation address. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Camp KBOO is now in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership drive now through June 29th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and support a summer of memories together.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, conservation groups gather together to defend the Pacific Northwest spotted owl from timber industry.
The mayor of Umatilla is suing the city that elected him.
And in national news, the Trump administration's, quote, big beautiful bill could cut health care for thousands and attract over $1 billion in health care funding from Oregon from 2027 to 2029.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 2nd, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Hannah Francis. Umatilla Mayor Caden Sipe is suing the city that elected him. The lawsuit is centered around a conflict between the mayor, the city council, and the city manager. The conflict arose when Mayor Sipe expressed dissent about fundraising for a new police station. The city council promptly censored Mayor Sipe, making it so that he could not represent the city without permission from the city manager or city council. In May, after the lawsuit had already been filed, the city of 7,500 people voted against the bond that the mayor had been speaking out against, a bond of nearly $20 million to fund a new police station. The complaint that Mayor Sipe filed said the city manager, Stockdale, and the city council are violating his rights to speech by limiting what he may say and when. Mayor Sipe also alleges that age discrimination is at the heart of the issue. He is seeking declaration that the city violated his rights and an injunction against future retaliation. He's also seeking financial compensation for attorney fees and other unspecified fees. The city manager and the mayor have had back-and-forth conflict since Mayor Sipe was elected in 2022. The city manager, Stockdale, cited a concern about Mayor Sipe having a potential conflict of familiar interest. Both of Sipe's parents work with the city government. His mother as the superintendent of the Umatilla School District and his father as the chair of the Umatilla Rural Fire Protection District. Mayor Sipe did acknowledge that he works with family connections, but did not admit a conflict of interest. Instead, Sipe pointed to the defendant's own ethical lapses when a city councilor failed to declare a conflict of interest himself.
The Pacific Northwest's iconic northern spotted owl is facing threats as the timber industry looks to log 3.5 million acres that have been deemed critical habitat for the bird. Conservation groups in Oregon, have intervened in their lawsuit. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Conservation groups are pushing back on a timber industry lawsuit brought against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that seeks to remove northern spotted owl protections across millions of acres in Oregon, California, and Washington. The industry aims to reinstate a rollback from President Trump's first term, opening 3.5 million acres of habitat to logging. Nick Cady of Cascadia Wildlands, one of the intervening groups, says the owl remains protected under the Endangered Species Act.
It's a way for them to bypass public processes and processes for designating critical habitat. You know, it goes through scientific review and public comment, and they're trying to just shortcut that whole thing and just sweep this all under the rug.
The American Forest Resource Council, a plaintiff in the lawsuit, says barred owls and wildfires pose the biggest threats to northern spotted owls, not logging. But Katie argues habitat protections are essential to prevent extinction, adding he is optimistic about the legal challenge. Joe Liebezeit with the Bird Alliance of Oregon says protecting spotted owl habitat safeguards clean water for millions, as unchecked logging increases sediment, damaging water quality. He adds preserving these forests also supports Oregon's economy.
If we have healthy forests that have trail systems that people want to go to and visit that have these old mature trees, that's going to generate money for tourism.
Liebezeit says there's no reason why the timber industry needs to take away from spotted owl habitat, adding they have plenty of other national forest land to log.
Every year, the industry makes millions and millions of dollars from logging areas that are not critical habitat.
In 2020, the Forest Service found northern spotted owls should be classified as endangered rather than threatened. But Katie says the agency has yet to provide stronger protections for the species. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Immigrant rights advocates are calling on Oregon legislators to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. The suite of bills would guarantee immigrant families access to housing, food, legal representation, and other supports. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
In response to increasing federal threats to immigrant communities, including cuts to food assistance and deportations, a coalition of over 100 community organizations is urging Oregon's lawmakers to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. It includes five bills that would provide Oregon's immigrant families access to things like food and housing assistance, disaster relief, and legal representation. Oregon Worker Relief Coalition President Martha Sonato says the legislation will benefit all Oregonians.
What community has put forward is a package of very impactful cost-saving investments. And these are all basic rights that really help families stay together and succeed.
Opponents to some of the measures argue it's unfair to ask legal residents to fund benefits for people in the country illegally. Supporters, however, counter that undocumented Oregonians contribute over $350 million annually in state and local taxes, making them deserving of these benefits. From the package, Sonato highlights a bill to create a farm worker disaster relief fund. She says Oregon farm workers, over 60% of which are immigrants, face lost wages due to extreme weather like heat waves and wildfires.
Farm worker disaster relief would really help make sure that farm workers are able to take care of themselves and their families, just like they're taking care of all of us.
Another bill in the package, Food for All Oregonians, would provide food benefits to all children in the state, regardless of their immigration status. The measures also seek funding to renew a legal aid program for immigrants, which Sonato says is crucial in today's climate.
This policy ensures that folks have due process by providing legal representation to immigrants that are seeking to adjust their status and facing deportation.
Sonato stresses that investments in immigrant communities now will save the state money in emergency food, housing, and medical resources down the road. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Clean air advocates question U.S. steel deal. Israeli fire kills more than two dozen at a Gaza aid site. And state lawmakers debate health coverage for unauthorized migrants and taxes on the wealthy. With those stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We think it might be a new hot strip mill. What does that mean for the coke works, ores, and blast furnaces? New mills employ fewer people. That's completely unaddressed.
Matthew Mihalik of the Breathe Project questions what Rust Belt communities in western Pennsylvania will get from a possible $2 billion investment Nippon Steel plans when taking over U.S. Steel. President Donald Trump celebrated what he says will be thousands of new jobs, but Mihalik says the Japanese company will use automation instead of employees and has a bad air pollution record. An audacious Ukrainian drone attack may have crippled a third of Russia's bombers capable of carrying cruise missiles. The attack comes as Kiev is sending its defense minister to ceasefire negotiations with Russia in Istanbul. Aid groups say Israeli fire killed 24 Palestinians and wounded many more at a food distribution site in Gaza. Israel is denying responsibility. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is warning that China may be preparing for military action in the Pacific. China calls the remarks provocative and accuses the U.S. of sowing division. The Senate's returning to work on Trump's big budget and policy bill. Some conservative budget hawks oppose it for ballooning the debt, and a handful of moderate Republicans don't like offsetting tax cuts for the wealthy with as much as $1 trillion in cuts to SNAP and Medicaid. Duke Medicine professor Nathan Boucher says cutting Medicaid could bankrupt most of America's rural hospitals.
Not just individuals will be hurt by this, but the hospitals will be hurt by this because they will have a degraded mechanism for which to bill for a lot of these patient care services.
North Carolina Republican Tom Tillis may face a tough race next year and is criticizing it for going back on promised clean energy investments. Supporters say it will reduce fraud and waste. Some states are considering raising taxes on the wealthy. Inspired by the success of what's called the fair share tax in Massachusetts, Maine lawmakers are looking at a 4% surcharge on income over $1 million to fund education. In spite of Republican attacks that illegal immigrants get government benefits, a Minnesota proposal would let all adult migrants enroll in Medicaid there. Their children already qualify. Republican State Representative Jeff Backer said it could put the budget into deficit.
We are looking at a tremendous hurt to our system.
And this week marks 101 years since Native Americans gained U.S. citizenship. Allison Neswood with the Native American Rights Fund says the 1924 federal law was a big step towards an as-yet unfulfilled promise.
The citizenship and the purported rights of citizenship wasn't going to be contingent on Native people cutting ties with their tribal community and tribal identity. So that was really important.
She says some tribes weren't granted the ballot by states until the 1950s, and many still face barriers to voting. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Montana's Department of Commerce recently awarded over $300,000 in grants to Native-owned businesses across the state. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana's Department of Commerce recently awarded more than $300,000 in grants to Native-owned businesses across the state. The funds aim to support the economic development of tribal communities while supporting small businesses. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler has more.
George Brown of Dodson and member of the Little Shell Chippewa Tribe is among 25 business owners set to receive grants from the state. Brown operates a small cafe, store, and meat processing facility with his wife, Sherry. The Milk River Meats and Eats is slated to receive $14,000 for new meat processing equipment. Brown says the money is a lifesaver.
Oh, it means a pile. I mean, things are so expensive this day and age that any help you can get to cover the main cost is going to make things work a lot better.
The funding stems from the state's Indian Equity Fund Small Business Grant Program and goes to a variety of industries. Grant funds will support Brown's meat processing as well as agriculture, retail, restaurants, and construction businesses. Mackenzie Espeland is an administrator with the Department of Commerce.
So supporting Native American-owned businesses really empowers the communities all across the state, and it strengthens those tribal economies.
She explained the grants create a ripple effect in their communities by stimulating growth and creating job opportunities. This year, the program's $320,000 will support business owners like George Brown. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Last week, a lawsuit from a pair of tribes challenging a power line project in southern Arizona, previously thrown out by a Tucson federal judge, has been remanded back to a lower court. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
Plaintiffs allege the Interior Department illegally granted permits, greenlighting construction of the SunZia transmission line, which broke ground in 2023. The 550-mile route through Arizona and New Mexico crosses over the San Pedro River Valley, a region of significance to Apaches and Ofums.
Certainly for this project, and probably never again, at least in the Ninth Circuit, is a federal agency going to be able to pretend that a project doesn't have those landscape altering effects.
John Welch is with the nonprofit Archaeology Southwest, one of four plaintiffs, including the Center for Biological Diversity, Fauna Ofum Nation, and San Carlos Apache Tribe.
This is a very, very strong appellate decision, a big thumb on the scales of justice in favor of the plaintiffs. And so it's not just procedural. They're going to have to consult in much better faith than the BLM did on this project.
An appeals panel found plaintiffs presented enough evidence that the agency violated the National Historic Preservation Act. Still, this latest ruling doesn't mean construction of SunZia will stop, nor that the tribes will win their legal battle to remove the lines. Gabriel Pietrazio, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
The Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs is urging for immediate assistance, including housing for evacuees, as wildfires burn in northern Manitoba. According to Manitoba First Nations leaders, thousands of First Nations people are seeking refuge, with many arriving in Winnipeg and other locations with nowhere to go and limited access to necessities. And they say current shelters are overcrowded and inadequate and are asking for hotels and other accommodations in Winnipeg and across the province to help displaced families. Leaders are urging the province for immediate assistance. The province has declared a state of emergency. Leaders say those in need of a place to stay include elders, children, and individuals with serious medical conditions. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your membership, your KBOO membership specifically, or become a new member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be warm with a high of 74 at about 6, and a lot of 52 degrees later on in the night. And tomorrow, it'll be warm once again with a high of 72 and a low of 55. Today, in 1896, Italian engineer and inventor Guglielmo Marconi applied for the first ever patent for a system of wireless telegraphy in the United Kingdom. The quote of the day is from Irish author and poet Oscar Wilde. He said, quote, "Be yourself. Everybody else is taken."
A man with a homemade flamethrower threw an incendiary device into a group in Boulder, Colorado, that had assembled to raise attention for Israeli hostages in Gaza. At least 8 people were injured, some with burns. The eldest is a Holocaust survivor. The suspect, Mohammed Soliman, 45, was booked into the Boulder County Jail and taken to a hospital for treatment of injuries he himself sustained. The attack occurred as a volunteer group called Run for Their Lives was concluding their weekly demonstration to raise visibility for the hostages who remain in Gaza. The attacker reportedly threw 2 Molotov cocktails at people marching and brought 14 other incendiary devices to the event. After the initial assault, the suspect went behind bushes and reemerged with a Molotov cocktail. He also caught himself on fire as he threw the third. Soliman was charged with a federal hate crime in federal court today. The attack took place just over a week after a man was charged with fatally shooting two Israeli embassy staffers outside of a Jewish museum in Washington. The eight victims who were wounded range in age from 52 to 88, and the injuries span from minor to serious.
Authorities did not disclose details, but said they believe that Soleiman acted alone and that no other suspect was being sought. Soleiman had allegedly been planning the attack for a year. He told investigators after his arrest he wanted to, quote, kill all Zionist people and wish they were all dead, end quote. FBI leaders immediately declared the attack an act of terrorism. The FBI said, quote, this act of terror is being investigated as an act of ideologically motivated violence based on the early information, the evidence, and the witness accounts. We will speak clearly on these incidents when the facts warrant it, end quote. After 75 years of Israeli occupation of Palestine, Hamas-led militants invaded southern Israel on October 7, 2023, killing some 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and kidnapping about 250 others. They are still holding 58 hostages, around a third of them believed to be alive. Israel's ground and air assaults in Gaza have killed over 50,000 Palestinians since October 7, 2023. After a brief period of relative calm, while ceasefires were discussed, Israel resumed their all-out attack on Palestine. Since last Tuesday, when the attacks resumed, at least 700 Palestinians have been killed.
The U.S. Senate is now voting on what Trump's administration is calling the Big Beautiful Bill that would cut funding and impact Medicaid coverage for thousands. The bill would require almost 700,000 Oregonians to prove that they are working or volunteering at least 80 hours per month to qualify for the base health care coverage. The requirement would apply to almost half of the people who are currently covered by the Oregon Health Plan. The bill says students, parents of young children, people with disabilities, people who are medically fragile, and tribal members would not have to prove this work quota. The current federal law is that states cannot impose a work requirement for basic health insurance. Some states have specifically applied for exceptions to this law. The proposed spending cuts, billions of dollars nationwide, could deprive Oregonians of more than $1 billion in the 2027 to 2029 period, and about $7 billion over a 10-year period. This is because of a specific provision that penalizes states that allow undocumented people to access health care. Oregon currently pays for health care for about 100,000 immigrants using state funds only. The program, called Healthier Oregon, provides for people without citizenship, including those with legal status and those without. The work requirement and penalty are part of the health section of the Trump administration's so-called Big Beautiful Bill. This bill is part of the administration's policy movement to cut social services and give tax breaks to wealthy Americans. The legislation has passed the House committee and is now in the Senate.
A visit to the emergency room can be stressful for kids and parents, but a new Wayne State University study finds therapy dogs can help kids relax and even bypass anxiety meds. Crystal Blair has more on the story.
A new study from Wayne State University finds that therapy dogs may be just what the doctor ordered for kids experiencing anxiety in the emergency room. Research shows around 15% of children need medication or physical restraint just to get through treatment in the ER, adding to an already stressful situation for them and their parents. The study included 80 kids ages 5 to 17 who received standard child life therapy, but half of the kids also spent about 10 minutes with a therapy dog team. Dr. Jeffrey Klein, lead researcher and Wayne State University emergency medicine professor, says there was an almost 50% reduction in anxiety among the kids who interacted with the therapy dogs.
The dogs worked as well as, say, for example, a drug like Valium, but with no drug. And also the kids that received the therapy dog plus handler generally required fewer behavioral control medications.
Researchers measured anxiety using face charts and saliva tests for cortisol, a stress hormone. They took readings before the dog visit, 45 minutes after, and again 2 hours later. More than half of the kids who did not see a therapy dog needed medication to calm their anxiety. However, in the group that spent time with the dog, only about a third needed those drugs. Dr. Klein says there's clear evidence that therapy dogs help in the ER, and he believes it's time to adopt the practice.
Emergency departments that have access to therapy dogs should be incorporating them routinely. The one downside is dogs need to sleep. You know, they don't work all day. They work for about 2 hours. But if available, I think EDs, especially children's EDs, should be using them.
Dr. Klein added that there are more than 50,000 therapy dogs in hospitals, schools, and nursing homes across the country, helping comfort people of all ages, from pediatrics to geriatrics. For the Michigan News Connection, I'm Crystal Blair.
Melting ice brings more ships and more pollution to Arctic waters. New rules will reduce airborne toxins, but an environmental group says discharge from scrubbers still threatens the fragile Arctic. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the climate warms, sea ice is melting, and ships are able to navigate some areas of the Arctic that were once impassable.
This is producing new opportunities for trade and for development.
But Sam Davin of the World Wildlife Fund Canada says it also creates new problems for Arctic communities and wildlife. Most ships burn heavy fuel oil, which creates air pollution that can harm people's health. So last year, the International Maritime Organization approved new regulations to help limit some of this pollution in the Canadian Arctic. They will require ship operators to reduce airborne emissions, for example, by switching to cleaner fuel.
But there's a lot more to be done.
For example, the rules allow ships to comply by using technology called scrubbers.
They capture sulfur oxides that are emitted from engine and boiler exhaust, mix them with seawater to capture those contaminants, and then they discharge this now polluted seawater back into the ocean.
He says this discharge is acidic and contains heavy metals and other pollutants, so it can harm marine ecosystems. So he says more ambitious steps are needed to protect Arctic waters and the people who depend on them. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
A new study from Northwestern University examines the history of protective labor laws for women. Researchers say while were designed to protect women, they ultimately benefited men. Judith Ruiz Branch has more on the story.
A new Northwestern University study examining the history of labor laws for women says men ultimately benefited from laws meant to protect women in the workplace. The study looks at protective labor policies across the history of the U.S. For about 60 years, those laws imposed restrictions on women's work. Economist Matthias Dopka says the study questions whether these laws were genuinely put in place to protect women from harm.
The main reason these laws were successful indeed was less a need to protect women at work and more a need to protect men from competition, because this happened when men and women were starting to increasingly compete for the same jobs.
Many old protective labor laws were eliminated alongside the rise of the equal rights movement. Dopka says the rise in gender equality was partly due to the alignment of men's and women's interests, influenced by factors like the increase of married women in the labor force and a shared concern for children. Dopka claims gender equality has historically correlated with economic growth. He says the female workforce rose in the mid-20th century, fostering support for increased opportunities for women in anti-discrimination laws. However, he says this support may be weakening due to falling marriage rates and differing views between men and women.
Young women increasingly become more liberal. Young men also used to be liberal, but they have started to turn further to the right. It's been talked about a lot, for example, in the recent presidential election, that Trump had a lot of success with young men. And you can see this on particular issues such as gender equality.
Dopka adds that recent legal changes and Supreme Court decisions also indicate a shift away from gender equality. For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis. And our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Hannah Francis. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth.
เข้าไปหาอายคนนอกสายตาเจ้าบ่แค่บ่สนอายมันคนใจง่ายที่เจ้าบ่รู้ตนเบื่อน้ำตา
You're listening to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. One of my favorite parts of doing this